Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RHAP's coverage of Survivor New Zealand Thailand. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 13 of this season, and I'm here with a great co-host. He is the host of the Know-It-Alls and all of the upcoming Survivor Australia coverage that you're going to be listening to. Please welcome my friend, Nick Iadanza. Nick, how you doing?
This little chicken wing is doing very well, Shannon. Thanks for having me back.
Reclaiming that term, making it powerful. I like it.
That's right. That's right. Thanks for having me. I'm super, super pumped to chat with you. You know, it's the second time this season that we've kind of, you know, gone through it all. And I'm really glad to come back in this excellent episode.
Yeah, Nick, usually I ask my guests like what they've been up to since we last heard from them on RHAP. With you, it's only been 8 weeks, so there shouldn't be any news. And yet there is a big piece of news.
There is. I've been watching Survivor South Africa. No, that's not the biggest news.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, no. Yes, I'm having a baby. So
no, actual mazel tov.
Yeah, thank you. I am super pumped about that as well.
How much in comparison to Survivor South Africa, though?
Yeah, look, you know, having a baby is great, but have you seen Survivor South Africa?
It's pretty good.
My life, I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready for my life to be kind of turned upside down by this baby. I couldn't be more stoked. My wife and I are today. I've actually spent the day building furniture for the nursery. And interesting little tidbit for all the RHAP people out there. I was going to actually tweet this out, we found out we were pregnant when we were in America, and we knew we were pregnant at the Know-It-Alls, the live Know-It-Alls, and that was actually the first night that Christine was feeling really, really sick and really, really ill, and everyone was like, oh, you know, it's so nice to meet you and your wife. Come have a drink. Everyone was being so hospitable and she had to keep saying no. And like, she was even rushing off to the toilet because she wasn't feeling well. So if any RHAP fans out there thought that she was, you know, a bit off her game, or if I was a bit distracted, that's not. It's because, you know, we were just like completely shocked with this exciting news. So yeah, that's what's been happening.
Maybe you should call the baby Boston. Boston yes. Powers Iadanza.
Someone's already made that. You know, people on Twitter, like when I announced it, even like kind of went back and worked out the dates and tried to figure out if it was a Boston or not. A Boston,
that's so creepy.
Know-It-Alls conceived baby. I laughed so hard. I loved it.
That's the creepiest thing I've ever heard.
So good.
Speaking of creepy things, I do have a request. As you know, we've been adding to the hashtag Rahampa for the Chizzy winner. And so I think it would be really great if the Chizzy winner could be the godparent of your child. Is that a yes?
That is why not be godparent? Why not be, you know, future, you know, best friend? Why don't you be the live-in nanny? You know, whatever. Okay. I'm happy to offer up all baby-related human services to the Rahampa. I like it.
So let's the cheesy winner will be the nanny of your child. This has really become such a responsibility because they will really also be receiving a watermelon with a baby in it, as well as some other goodies. But I mean, I don't think you want to be winning the cheesy anymore. Like, Lisa better hope she slows down with the votes because she might be overtaking Matt and she might have a new job where she has to come take care of your kid.
Look, I think it would be an honor to look after my kid, Shannon. What are you saying? What are you saying about my
unborn baby?
You would
have to relocate, though.
Look. If that's too much, then you know, just a distant international godparent would suffice as well.
Wow, this has become such an amazing prize. So we'll see what happens with that. It's really getting down to the wire with the Chizzy. But Nick, let's head to Survivor New Zealand now and talk about what you feel about the season as it's rolled on. We last spoke to you, I think, in week 5. So what have your thoughts been throughout the season?
Yeah, I've been absolutely loving it. Obviously, it was sad to lose JT and Dylan in one episode, but there's been some, you know, there's been some really great episodes since then. And I'm sorry if it wasn't for Queen Lisa, like it's been great, but Lisa has made the show. Like for me as a fan watching the strategy, seeing her kind of just kind of her journey has been amazing. And I wonder that if she wasn't on it, would it be as good? I'm sure. I think it would be great, but she's what's made it excellent for me. I am I'm just such a Lisa fan. What she pulled off last week was incredible. And I have all my fingers crossed for her going into the final. But we will talk about it, that I actually think Lisa will not win.
Wow. Well, that's really, really dark. And hopefully she'll still win the chance to be the godmother of your child. But yeah, I'm concerned because this entire time I've been saying that Tara and Tess are drawing dead. And I definitely still think Tara is drawing dead. But through this episode, based on her edit, based on the fact that she's now in the final four, I kind of always saw her getting to the end with Adam if she was going to get there. And I thought Adam would get those votes. Now I'm looking at it like, could Tess win? Could she either knock out Lisa at the final four, win an immunity or something, or take out Lisa as a threat? Well, not that she would be doing it, but her and Dave together. Or, even worse, could she beat Lisa at a final tribal council? And honestly, like, I can't even handle it. I probably just won't be back here for the finale podcast, so apologies in advance for that if that happens, because that'll be like Aubrey and Michelle, but so much worse for me, especially with the way Tessa played this episode. We're going to have to get into it, but I once again thought that she was the worst player in this episode, like I did last week, without going home in either week. So it would be so painful if she were to, like, take out Lisa or beat Lisa in some way when Lisa has been nothing short of strategically fantastic.
Look, I hope I'm wrong. And my history of choosing winners has been wrong and might help us out in this instance. But I actually think that Tess is going to win.
Oh my God.
And it pains me to say that. It's not because I think she deserves to win. It's just, I feel like from episode one, I felt like there was someone who was going to be there at the end, and that was Tess. And Dylan and I even spoke about this on Twitter, and I thought I'd mentioned it on the podcast last week. But I had said that Tess, Lisa, and Dave would be there at the end, and it's happening. And I just thought that Tess's storyline was going to send her all the way to Final Tribal Council. Now, I thought, like you, that she was going to get absolutely rolled in a Final Tribal Council situation, but she's not. She's going to get votes. Mm. And that is so scary to me.
Yeah.
I didn't even know how to – I'm lost for words, and anyone who knows me knows that that is nearly freaking impossible. But – look, it hasn't happened yet, so we can still hope that it doesn't. But what do you think is the scenario where Tess wins?
Well, I have no recollection of you saying that those three would be going to the end, but well done if you did. I don't really know how you did that. Tessa?
It was the edit. I felt it was really obvious in the edit. But like, I have no inside info. I just felt like that was happening. So,
Always said, though, with Lisa and Tess, from episode one where they had this thing where they were put in direct opposition to each other, I've said Lisa will have a victory over Tess. And I feel like that scene to me is still so pivotal. And I really, maybe it's hope, but I think it is going to happen. And I don't know what that victory is still. I think most likely it would be a final tribal council victory because that seems like it would be the most prominent. But she could take her out at four, and then Tess is like the quote-unquote fallen angel spot, and Lisa goes on to win the game. Maybe she even beats her in a fire-making challenge. I just feel like Lisa's having that victory over Tess just based on that edit. But, I mean, yeah, it could be hope because that's what I want to happen, but that's how I've been analyzing it. But Tess has a shot. Like, she had a good edit in this episode despite her terrible moves, which we'll talk about. She had that, like, fighting underdog edit. She said she had to win, and then she won reward and immunity. And I think that she firstly could point to Lisa as a threat at the Final Four, take her out, could win immunity at the Final Four, take her out, could point to Dave as a threat, take him out, and then get to the end, and she has some votes locked up, like a Brad, Renee, obviously an Adam, who's her champion on the jury. And you can say what you want about Adam, but the man is very influential and he can sway some people. So with that on the jury, she could have some votes. And I think I could see it happening in terms of like her actual pathway through the edit. I still think Lisa would have one over on her, but you know, I couldn't see it happening a week ago, and now I can actually see it, and it terrifies me.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And if you watch Jury Villa, and I assume we can speak about Jury Villa as well.
It's amazing.
The most recent Jury Villa, like, I've got other thoughts on Jury Villa. We'll talk about those later. But in the most recent Jury Villa, where Matt tells Adam about the friendship between he and Dave, and we'll speak about that as well. But that to me wasn't the biggest bombshell in the Jury Villa. The biggest bombshell was when Matt gets voted out. He sits down at the dinner table and he says that I'm going to vote for Lisa, and it is dead silent. And the only person who says something is, I think it's Brad. He says, well, she gets one vote.
Oof, that hurts. Yeah, you know what? Thinking about it, I did watch the episode and then Jury Villa, like, sequentially. So by the time I came out of that whole viewing experience, I was feeling good about Tess, but it honestly might have been more about the jury villa. Like, Adam is very much on the anti-Lisa train, super bitter. He says she's the best player and he does not care. He will not be voting for her and does not want to give her any love. So I just felt really, really bad that she was getting a ton of anger there. And then also the Dave thing, it's like, it's not looking good for him either at Jury Villa. So it's looking really good for Tess if she can get there and there are threats around her and it is just one immunity challenge that she has to win. I think there could be votes in her favor. And yeah, it's scary. I've said it a few times, but I'm scared. Yeah.
Tessa will definitely be in the final three. And there's no way that Tara will be getting any votes, but I think she'll be there as well. And mm-hmm. there's no way that I don't think that Dave is getting any votes either. So
no votes. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I really don't see it.
I feel like Aaron and Eve would be locked for him.
I don't see it. I see this being a battle between Lisa and Tess, and I don't think common sense is going to be prevail. And yeah, there have been plenty of people who said this is like Aubrey and Michelle. This is absolutely not Aubrey and Michelle, because Michelle knew what she was doing. She wasn't as great as Aubrey. Aubrey is like the best. I absolutely love Aubrey both personally and as a survivor. But I'm sorry, Tess has no idea what she's doing.
Oh, Tess is way worse than Michelle.
Oh, like they're not even in the same conversation. Like, Tess would have to be one of the worst survivor players I have ever seen. And Tess, if you're listening, I'm sure you're not, but if you're listening, I apologize. It's more about the fact that you don't know what you're doing in the game. I'm sure you're lovely. But she has no strategic acumen. She lets people go off and strategize. And she just, the whole thing with Larry the Lizard, yeah, it's funny and it's just, but it's so indicative of the fact that she doesn't know what she's doing. Now, look, we could be wasting a lot of time talking about nothing because she could be the first person voted out in the final. But I just don't see a scenario where she doesn't make it to the end, and I don't see a scenario where she doesn't garner at least a few votes in with that jury.
Yeah, well, this is becoming a very depressing conversation.
Although, it is. Let's change the...
No, I want to talk about Tess. We have to talk about Tess because she was a huge, huge player in this episode. And rest assured, she won't be the godmother of your child because she's on 3 Chizzy points, which I think now like might have been a bit too much. I went back and listened to why I gave her points in the pre-merge and like, yeah, she did okay. But this episode, she wins the reward. This is the worst reward pick I've ever seen. I've thought about it over the last 2 days. I'm not being hyperbolic. This was so bad. Like, I've laughed a lot about the mattress lie. I went on about it for weeks. It kind of fell off with that. I still think it's really funny. This to me is worse and almost funnier in its terribleness. This was the worst move she could have made. I genuinely think any other person would have been a better pick. Like, Dave, as the swing vote, is the obvious pick. She's at Adam with the reward. They're like, we really need to get Dave. I'm like, you know what would help with that? If he was having a massage with you right now. And like, even Lisa, she's at the top of the food chain. Like, at that point, she's warring with Adam. It might come down to her versus Adam if she doesn't win immunity. So, like, take Lisa, appeal to her. Even Tara. Take Tara. Be like, you can't beat them. Even Tara says in her voting confessional, she was like, you should have spoken to me earlier in the day. You know when's earlier in the day? The day before. At a massage. So any single person would have been better than Adam. Also, you're mad at Adam. Adam's not mad at you. So if you need to repair that relationship, just stop silent treatmenting him.
Yes.
And just forgive him. You don't need to give him a massage. He needs to give you a massage.
Yes.
She leaves the majority behind on purpose, like Burden did with Fair Play, except she has no power. She leaves Lisa to consolidate her relationship with Dave and with Tara while her and Adam are talking about how, oh, they couldn't ruin our relationship and their plan failed, as they sit there as a 2 in 5. Bad math, Tessa. This was such a bad pick, and it just outlined to me, like, if I was going to be upset with her as a winner of the fantastic season before, this cemented it for me.
Like, you're so right in all those things, but it was good in the fact that it healed the rift between the two of them, but that doesn't do anything. Like, great. And I think that she thinks that was such a good move because they were fighting and, you know, they brought them back together. These people can't take us down. It's like, yeah, look, they might not be able to, you know, might not be able to keep you away from liking someone, but they're going to take you down in the end. Well, I do think she's going to win, but like, it's just such a bad choice. It's such a bad choice for so many reasons. I loved seeing Adam on the reward because he's hilarious. I loved the shot where they're like, they're on the canoe and they're going out and they're like, goodbye, you miserable pieces. And then it cuts.
That was amazing editing.
The editing was amazing. But I just feel like it was great for Adam that he got a he got a chance to go on a reward just before he was voted out of the game. But other than that, it did nothing. It would have been in Adam's best interest if Adam didn't go.
For sure. I said that, you know, she gave Adam a nice massage but also signed his death warrant. Like, that's actually a really good way to get revenge on him for voting for you last episode, because now he has absolutely no shot to stay in the game. Like, it would have been way better for her to end up losing that challenge. You know, have Dave take Lisa on the reward and get stuck behind with Tara where you can talk to her. Or have Lisa somehow win and have to pick between Tara and Dave. That's a really good situation for her. Winning was terrible, but I had this conversation with my brother and he was like, you can't even criticize her because it's kind of like how this is what he said. He said, there's a difference between amoral and immoral. Like, amoral is devoid of morals and immoral is bad morals. And she's devoid of strategy. It's not bad strategy when there's no strategy there. Like, she's making a personal decision. She's not thinking about any of these things. Like, Lisa even talks about how they now have like an exclusive access to maybe an idol, but that's not something that she's thinking about. That's not going through her head. It's day 35 or day 36. She's been in this game now for weeks and there's no strategy there. It's a completely personal, emotional decision. She wants to have a fun day with her friend, just basically cement herself as on the bottom. This is your future winner of Survivor New Zealand, ladies and gentlemen, making this kind of choice on day 35 of the game. It gets painful.
And the fact that both her and Adam thought it was such a good thing shows that they're both not very good at Survivor. Like, and Adam said it himself. And I one of the things I've always said many times on the podcast is I appreciate when people admit that they're not that good at Survivor. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like I was good, but I don't think I was great. I think I had so many flaws. And I appreciate that Adam can point out the fact that he made a lot of flaws. So I appreciate that. But still, there's so much more that they could have done. And the fact that they both thought that it was a really successful afternoon shows that they have such a little understanding of what's truly going on there. We don't need to harp on, but I feel like it's important. Yeah, I feel like we've done it. I just think it just shows how clicky Tessa is, and that's because I feel like that's how she'd be in her real life. And you need to be different in Survivor. Survivor, you can't be like that. You have to, you know, be flexible.
Adapt.
And she was not. You have to adapt. And she doesn't do any of those things. She's just falling onto what she knows in everyday life. And do you know what? This is where it shows when someone has never seen the show before.
But you know, some people don't see the show, but on day 35, they've kind of worked it out. Like, I love this running theme of Tessa being put into situations where you have to make strategic decisions, like the outpost, like the reward, and her just making like the worst lies or decisions in those scenarios every time. But from Adam's perspective, at least, you know, he starts off the day and Tessa's really mad at him. And then by the end of the day, he's like, you've got a massage and they've made up. Like, that is okay for him. But for Tessa, she held the power, at least in her relationship with Adam. So she could have made up with him whenever she wanted. She didn't need to bring him on the reward to do it. It was so useless. Like, she's on the bottom and she has a little bit of power and that she can choose someone here. And she just screws it up royally.
What I will say that Adam did well is that he did a good job of fanning the flames that it was the other three people that made me do that thing. And look at those bastards and all that kind of stuff. So he kind of like removed ownership of the decision he made at last tribal council. But that's not the move. The move is use your moves, use your ownership at a different point, not have to kind of backpedal later. So if we could just talk about, like, I wanted to get your thoughts on like what Adam's argument was when they returned from the MAP tribal council. So he's just voted for Tessa and he goes, you know, oh, I didn't, you know, it was between you or me. So, you know, I had to vote for you. But I think that she did a really good job of saying, I also knew that it was between you or me and I didn't vote for you. I thought that was kind of like, you know, she kind of shut him down there. I thought that was kind of cool. But how did you feel about the way that Tessa kind of reacted on how Adam reacted, or the fact that he got bamboozled to vote for her?
Yeah, this was such a bad look for Adam. And I want to talk about how his game devolved to this point where he was voting for his best friend, crying while doing it and getting blindsided at the same time, because he got the chizzy at the merge. And I feel like he was in the best spot at the merge. You know, he had all the information. He was working with everyone. He was really at the center socially. And that continued on to the Brad vote where he knew everything that was happening. That's the first time that he relinquishes purposefully a little bit of control. He doesn't tell Brad what to do. He lets that happen. And from there, he kept relinquishing. But the problem I have with Adam was that this seems like a fine strategy to me. But at some point is when you stamp down, you make your move, you take control. I don't think he was ever planning to do that. I think if he was, the Eve vote feels really perfect for that. I think that he was trying to literally ride that out to the end by playing this conservative defensive game. He even says in the preseason he wants to play a defensive game. So actually, yeah. I admire the fact that he went in with that mentality and played, you know, his strategy as he wanted to. But the problem was that once you start purposefully relinquishing control, at a point it gets away from you and you just have lost that power. So I think that the point, the Matt vote was like the cherry on top. It just showed how much he'd lost control of his game. And I think that the reason he wanted to play so defensively was because look at how he is as a juror. He says Lisa's played the best. He knows she's played the best.
Yeah.
But he won't vote for her because she voted him out. And I think he was looking at it like, what would I vote for? So what will everyone else vote for? They won't vote for me if I'm voting them out, backstabbing them. I'll just be nice because that's how you get jury votes. But the thing is, you do get jury votes sometimes when people vote you out. In fact, sometimes they even respect that. So I think that he couldn't see outside the box of that. That's why he kept playing with this defensive social game, lost complete control to the point where he blindsided Tess. Honestly, what could he say? That is incredibly awkward.
And that is why Adam lost.
Exactly.
Shout out to Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. You said that exactly right. I feel like when you talk about the relinquishing, do you know what it reminds me of? I was thinking of when you were saying that. Do you know the challenge? It was on Survivor South Africa. It's been on American Survivor. It's been on Australian Survivor. Where you're hanging off the side of the jetty with a rope. And every 5 minutes you move down one knot on that rope. And every time you move down a different rung, it gets harder and harder to hold on. That's kind of like what he did. He started at the merge in this really strong position. And every vote he moved down one rope until he was nearly horizontal. And it's like, you can't claw your way back from that. You've painted yourself into a corner. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where his game kind of like completely disintegrated in the end.
Yeah. When he talks about, you know, everyone making him do it, I think he might believe that himself. Like, I really do, because if I look at the way he talks about others, and we need to talk about who Adam was as a character, because he was a very polarizing character, but it was very much like, they're evil, the evil witches making everyone do this, and I'm like the pure good hero. So I think he might even believe it. Like, how did they manipulate me into doing it with their like dark magic, basically, when I'm the hero? And I've always said, Adam is very funny. I think we needed his presence on the show. He's a larger than life character. He made the really long episodes entertaining.
For sure.
But I would have more fun with it if he embraced being the anti-hero or the villain at the very least, you know, embrace it. Own it. That's your character. You have no filter, whatever. That's your thing. But it's unfun. It was unfun in the pre-merge and it wasn't fun in this episode where it was like, they're the villains. Nice, sweet Lisa, who makes a move in the game, is a villain. And I'm the nice, good hero. And that's so tone deaf to me, so unaware. And that's like the parts of his character that I dislike the most.
For sure. For sure. You said that so perfectly. And it's kind of like reminds me like, well, you know, Coach wasn't funny in his first season. He was like a larger than life character and he was doing things which, you know, were like, you know, bad. But the fact that he, the second time he comes back, he leans into it a little bit more. You know, he leans into his character and he, you know, he's on the villain tribe and all that kind of stuff. I feel like if we got Adam back a second time, he would then kind of know that it's okay to just kind of have fun with it and you don't have to pretend that you are this really good guy because you've got these parts of your personality which, you know, washing your hands in the well with mud on them was hilarious. Mm-hmm. But it's in the same kind of arena as Russell Hance burning socks or hiding a machete. It's the same kind of thing. Like, it's just a lesser version of that. So I feel like if he just kind of understands, like you said, and not so tone deaf to the fact that, like, that's okay to do that. Like, it's okay. And not everyone else isn't this kind of evil person. It's kind of like the reason why him and Tess get along so well. Because Tess says, another tone-deaf idiot. Sorry, that's a bit mean. Another tone-deaf player.
Trigger word.
She says, am I the only one playing this game with morals?
Yep, there's that trigger word, morals.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I knew you would
ask
hate
Dylan.
This.
Ask Dylan if you're the one playing with morals. Like, I just feel like there's so many... It's just the sanctimony. It's too much. It's too much to bear.
Oh my God. So yeah, she's kept that mentality beyond the game based on that tweet that she sent to Dylan.
Yes,
and like, how crazy, if she wins, that means that she tweeted calling Dylan a horrible person, knowing that Dylan got voted out the next week and knowing that she wins. That makes it so much worse. Like, it keeps getting worse and worse in hindsight, that tweet.
And we are not going to forget about that tweet.
I never will.
We
all
never
of that
will
lie. All this reward pick now.
Oh God. Yeah. Look, Adam, I feel like Adam is a hypocrite. He was such a good character. He was the best in terms of the we got the most out of him and JT. We got the most out of Adam, though, because of how long he lasted. But he has to understand he's a hypocrite. He cannot call someone dramatic when he's the most dramatic person on the season.
And that's fine, though. It's fine to be dramatic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was so dramatic out there. But that's my personality. So that's just what I'm happy if people said that about me. You know, he talks about people being schemy. You just voted for your best friend. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think if he just, knew that he was a hypocrite, great.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, because in the pre-merge, the Dylan stuff was ugly. Very, very ugly. And then I said the best thing for his game, like especially even in the edit, would be Dylan getting voted out. And it was kind of easy to forget about a lot of that stuff because I do think that through most of the merge. Like he was funny. He was mocking people. Like it was a bit mean, but it was harmless. Like he's mocking Dave eating at the rewards. Like it's not terrible. And like the Aaron stuff, which, you know, hurt me deeply, but that that was strategic at the very least. So it had a purpose or it was mild. But then this episode, he was right back to just like cringing. It was so petty. It was so personal. It's like, now I remember what I really didn't like in the pre-merge right in time for him to go home. That it got a bit too extreme for me again in this episode.
Look, I didn't hate what he was saying. Like, I thought it was funny, but like, it just it was the hypocrisy which I couldn't get past. So, I guess we should talk about Lisa and her amazing trajectory in this game. But you know, even the way he says, he's like, "Oh, Lisa the dragon." Like, she's not sweet little Lisa now; she's Lisa.
Yeah, that was funny. But then he has to like make fun of her looks and stuff. Like, I don't like it.
I agree. That was funny. But then when he called her, what did he call her? I don't know.
Chicken.
A chicken. She looks like a chicken skeleton or something like that.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's the stuff. That's that extra 5% that we don't like.
But we needed him on the show. We absolutely did. Like, you can say if you loved him, if you hated him, if you love to hate him, he's causing a reaction. And that, for me, like, he's a TV character. Like, that's what you need.
Yeah, no, we definitely needed him. How did you feel about the whole Lisa? Because Lisa, to me, Queen Lisa, like, the best. How do you feel now that the secret's out on Lisa? Because something that you've spoken about in all your other podcasts is about how, you know, someone kind of their head pops up and then they get voted out the next week. And it's happened with Matt and et cetera. Well, you know, do you think now that, you know, I know we've already kind of spoken about what we think is going to happen at the end, but do you think that because the secret is so out and Adam made sure it was so clear at Tribal Council, do you think that that the others will kind of cotton on and turn, especially in light of what Tara said about if you had come to me earlier?
Yeah, how wishy-washy is that from Tara? What is Tara even doing? I'm a bit more bullish on Lisa than you. I would still have her at the top of my winner rankings. Just the fact that she makes it through here again, such an incredible job. Because, we have seen everyone go home that next episode usually, or maybe a couple episodes later after making that move. So it's a dicey time. And in terms of last week, we talked about claiming credit for the move. There's no discussion at all anymore, if there ever was one, about Lisa versus Dave claiming credit. Because Dave here is crying. He says he doesn't even feel as good as when Matt was there and there's too many unknowns now. So, like, he is emotionally distraught by this. Like, look at the way he was at Tribal Council, and the fact that she got him to do something that was so personally difficult for him is incredible. Like, maybe she is a dragon because she has some sort of like superpowers, and we're reclaiming that term too. But how does she survive from here? I think she's got some options. I wonder if Tara will ever turn on her. And if Tara doesn't, I think it's less a question of loyalty and more a question of delusion at where Tara thinks she is with a final Tribal Council coming up. So I think she has Tara in her back pocket. Tessa is a major jury threat. So if Tessa doesn't win immunity, I think that she could paint her as a threat. I think she could potentially paint Dave as a threat. Plus, he's proven loyal, so he might stick with her. So I think that she does have a shot. You know, it's either going to be like a Natalie Anderson situation where somehow they weren't trying to get Natalie Anderson outed for, even though she was the clear threat. In fact, she wasn't even one of the options. It was Keith versus Missy, which is crazy. Or it's going to be like David Wright, where all her allies are eventually like, but you're right there and you didn't win immunity. How can we not take you out? So that's the two ways it can go for her. I personally think that she's got it like more than you do. I would have hope, but it's a very dicey time for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that I've loved watching her do her whole, like, you know, I struggle with interactions with people, and then her realizing that she actually can kind of cope, you know, make it in these social situations. And I like that she is now realizing it as well. But we are now getting those confessionals, which we got from Matt about, you know, I would vote for me, you know, I would get my kick me out. And it's like, which is great. Like no harm, no foul in saying it, but it seems like it's following a pattern, and it's either that she's about to be taken out, because look, I don't think she's going to win immunity next immunity, you know, so either she gets taken out or she's, oh, I'm so stressed about it. I'm so stressed.
Shannon, if she gets taken out, it really is Survivor Russian Dolls. Like literally it's just been like person on top. They have like confessionals where they're confident. They get taken out by someone. Then they have those confessionals. Like it's been such a crazy pattern. Surely if you do it at the final six, that's at the perfect time. You just need to hold on for a little bit longer. If they take her out then it was really just like, what could she have done? She had to make the move against Matt, obviously.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I really, really love that she says she knew it would put her at risk. She knew it would put a target on her back. She still did it. So she knows the position that she's in. I've always said her awareness is almost second to none. One of the best awareness I've ever seen from anyone in the game. So she knows where she's at, but it's about maneuvering it. And then even if she gets there, will she win? So I do want to talk a little bit about the jury.
Okay.
And maybe we should go more in depth to Jury Villa. I cannot say enough that if you have not watched Jury Villa, watch Jury Villa. It is now, it's essential viewing. Like it's a part of the show more than any Ponderosa I've basically seen at this point, especially with the Matt Dave connection that is happening off screen with Matt at Jury Villa. So it's absolutely essential. But
I'm not as high on the Jury Villa experience as you have been, except for the last one.
Yeah, the last one is now essential, I mean.
The last one is definitely essential viewing.
I mean, Aaron's been there the whole time, so you should probably watch it anyway. But yeah, no, the last one is like, they should have included it in the show because it's like so important to what's happening.
Yeah. Did you want to set it up for people who haven't seen it?
Okay. So basically here are the crib notes of Jury Villa. As we said, Adam's super bitter against Lisa and is kind of telling everyone all of these things she said, unclear if it's true or not, but saying like lies that she's told. And it's even kind of turning people who are on her side. Even Matt is like, now I feel like she's just lying for the sake of lying. So
yes, I hated seeing that.
Yeah, think about what Adam did to Chani at the merge, to poor sweet Aaron, who's, you know, a great person, we can all agree. And he was talking about him and he made people think that he was this horrible person. Like even when Brad came to Jury Villa, he like thought Aaron was this horrible person based on what he's heard from Aaron. So, you know, Adam can spin a story, that we know. So I am very concerned. And then obviously the other scene was that Matt decides he has to tell his friend Adam that he has a long-term friendship with Dave. He actually calls Dave one of his oldest and dearest friends. So it must be quite a close friendship that he said that. This is terrible for Dave's chances. Terrible.
Yeah. Look, we'll get to Dave after, but like Dave is, he's, you know, we talk about drawing dead. There's like, beyond drawing dead. I really can't see him getting a vote. And if he does, you know, fine. I definitely misread the situation.
I disagree. So we'll talk about it later.
Okay. But I feel like this is like, this will change a lot of things, right? Because Adam now knows, and he even says, this has shifted everything I've thought. And to me, that's the glimmer of hope we need that'll get Lisa the win. That it'll now, they'll start to recalibrate what they knew about what occurred in the game. And hopefully in that recalibration, they will start to understand something else that might impact Lisa positively. That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hoping. I loved at the end how Jury Villa was left as like a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It was left as a cliffhanger. So Matt goes and tells Adam, then Matt leaves and Adam's sitting there and he's ruminating on it. And he's like, wow. And then we get this confessional from him where he says, you know, oh, this is now it's really making me consider, you know, what happened in the game. This is now definitely shows, you know, why I'm out of the game. And then it ends with him leaning in and talking directly to the camera, like in his room and saying, I'm going to go tell Brad. And then it cuts. And I was like, No, my internet's dropped out. Like there's more, isn't there? There's more. Like it was so good. It seemed like a, you know, everyone knows I'm like a Real Housewives tragic. It was like when they do like the to be continued and when it gets to a really juicy fight and you're like, oh no, what's going to happen next? Like it was so like that. And okay, I've got some, this is my inside story about life in Jury Villa. Okay. As we all know, I spent many, 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 many days at Jury Villa. You can't switch survivor mode off, right?
Mm.
You've been playing a game did Adam get voted on day 36?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was voted out day 37. So I was in the game just as long as he was, right? You can't switch that mode off of, you know, the secrecy, the telling stories, the, you know, all of that stuff. And when Matt tells Adam, I have a feeling that Matt knows what's going to happen. And Matt has been spending a day or two in Jury Villa. He's ruminated on the fact of, far out, this has ruined my game. And I think that Matt wants to hurt Dave in that moment. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that, because that's what happens. That's what happens. People's feelings get hurt. And you sometimes you just can't avoid that, right? So I think he knows what he was doing. And you just – and he, because you cannot expect that Adam is not going to then go tell people, because you can't switch survivor mode off. I'll tell you a little really quick story. Sorry to kind of like be talking for so long.
No, it's all good.
After I was voted out, after a couple of people, the Jen Louise came out, and we were talking about books. And I said, oh, there's a bookshelf over here in the lobby. Like, come with me and we'll go and I'll show you where they are. And we went and we looked at them, and we had kind of moved away from the pack, and we were sitting here. We're just talking about the books on the shelf. And then I was like, okay, you go back and then I'll go back. And like, we totally were still in survivor mode, as in like, we were literally doing the most innocent thing, and it was 10 days after the show, but we couldn't switch that off. So I have a feeling that Matt knew what he was doing, and I have a feeling that Adam's going to tell everyone and is going to severely hinder Dave's chances.
Yeah, what no, I wouldn't trust Adam with the secret of all people.
Exactly. And
it has to be.
Matt knows what he's doing. Come
he
on.
He has to, because even if it's on an unconscious level that he wants to hate Dave and he can't even admit it to himself, but like, look, it's 4 days or even less, if you know, even fewer if Dave gets voted out. So surely you could keep it to yourself. If you want to tell Adam at some point, like, do you have to tell him now? Like, you said you was okay with this. I think it's particularly cruel from Matt, and Matt's one of the people that I love the most on the show. I was definitely rooting for him, and this really disappointed me, honestly, because, look, I know they promised they wouldn't vote each other out, and I know that they also promised they wouldn't tell each other, you know, they wouldn't tell anyone else about the relationship. And Dave broke that first. He voted Matt out, but Dave had to do that for his game. Like, there was a purpose to it that wasn't just, I'm going to hurt Matt now. In fact, he definitely didn't want to hurt Matt at all. Look at the way he was crying. Matt just washed him at tribal council. Devastated. He said he was thinking of quitting, like, crazy, crazy devastated having done this to him, but because he needed to for his game. And Matt gains nothing from this. He's not still in the game, as much as he may feel like he is. He knows he has nothing to gain from it, and he does it just to hurt Dave. I really don't see the purpose, and honestly, I thought it was a little bit hypocritical, because Matt talks about how he never would have written his name down. We had confessionals from him a couple of episodes talking about how he wasn't going to go to the end with Dave and was thinking of cutting Dave. So it's hypocritical. It seems honestly really cruel to me, and it was just like, well, you did this, and it's like tit for tat, I'm going to do it back. And I wouldn't have expected that from Matt, who was someone who had so much like respect for Lisa, who had been the instigator of that move against him and like was very much game, respects game, like the least bitter of the jurors. But when it comes to Dave, his longtime friend, he does this thing to him, and I just think it was unnecessarily mean.
But that's what happens on Survivor. That's what happens. He's not on Survivor anymore. But this is the problem, that you are still on Survivor because you still have a huge part to play. And Jury Villa, the dynamics at Jury Villa, like, it's really hard to get across in like a 6-minute video. They are all day, every day. And because no one's watching you anymore in terms of like producers, you can start talking, and loose lips really do kind of like, you know, impact the way people think. And I was very conscious of trying not to do that, but it gets tricky. Because every three, you know, just as it kind of simmers down, then another person is injected into the game, and then those feelings come back up, and then it simmers down again, and then another person is ejected from the game. And it's really hard not to do that. And I actually think that a reason why Matt tells Dave, and you know, maybe Matt's listening, and maybe you can reach out and clarify this, but I actually think it has a little bit to do with the fact that he was able to speak back home. Did you see it on the jury? So in Jury Villa, he gets a phone and he calls his girlfriend. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the person who had to wait 25 days being out of the game I had to wait till I was in New Zealand airport to call my fiance. But, you know, other than me being a bit of Betty about that, what I think happens there is it removes him from the game. And while you say that he's not in the game anymore, you are in the game until final tribal council, right? No matter whether you want it or not, you have a part to play in this game. And by speaking to home, and he even says, you know, oh, Dave, you know, blah, 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 I should have done this. And she says Dave. So presumably that conversation went for a little bit longer. He's now removed himself from the game, and he's talking back home and trying to explain someone to someone who has very little context of what's actually occurring. And then I think that that would have kind of then he would have started ruminating on it even more, even more, even more. And he would have then felt really bad about it. I showed my wife this, and we were talking about, you know, what would have happened had I been able to speak to home straight away. And she said that it would have had a really, really negative impact on the way you viewed the game. And I agree with her, because while I would have loved any chance to speak to home, I had a job to do, and I had a job to do still that I couldn't remove myself from it and be in two worlds at once. You're already in two worlds, which is the game and Jury Villa. You can't then try and exist across three different worlds. And I think that that has a part to play in why he told everyone.
Yeah, why did they allow him to do this? We haven't seen this from any of the other jurors unless it's happening off screen, but this is impure. As you said, they're still there. They're still doing a job. They have to be completely focused on that. There's a reason that they don't get other technology. So yeah, I really don't like that from the show. But I just look at it and I'm like, maybe I'd expect it from an Adam. Adam's bitter. He'd admit it. Matt was the one who came out, you know, respecting game, being strategic, not being bitter. And there's only two reasons that you would do this against Dave right now. To hurt him, which is a definite reason, and that's bitter to me. Or also for ego, because he hid so much of his game from everyone because he couldn't tell them.
Yes.
And now he can be like, well, I was the one keeping Dave the entire time, and he can finally show some of the, like, you know, more complicated parts of his game. So that's two not very good reasons for me for screwing over a friend. And maybe, I don't know, I'm being too soft about this, but it hurt me. Like, it hurt me as a fan of the Matt-Dave friendship and as a fan of both of those characters that I was like, why? I just didn't get why he would do this. There's no strategy. It's just mean.
It doesn't bother me. And Matt, if you're listening, it's fine. Like, it was in the context of the game.
Fine.
No, it's fine to me, because like, he would be feeling really sore after all the help that he gave him. And yes, Dave helped him initially, and then he helped him for a long stretch. What happens at Jury Villa? Again, I could talk about Jury Villa for hours on end. People come out and they start swinging their balls around and start talking about, oh, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this. And a lot of it is utter garbage, let me tell you, because everyone, again, is the hero of their own narrative. But like, Matt wouldn't be able to actually explain all those things. Everyone's sitting around the table, or, you know, hanging in the cabana, and they're talking about, you know, I did this, or this is why I did this. Oh, cool. And everything's kind of coming to light and making sense, and everyone's able to kind of like have this cathartic experience, and he can't have that either. And I feel sorry for him, because he did a lot of work for Dave, and then he was kind of voted out by Dave, and you know, that would suck.
Yeah.
So I understand, Matt, if you're listening, I understand. It's probably like, it's a dick move, but like, I understand. Like,
we agree it's a dick move, though. But it's a difficult situation, because usually people come out of the game and they have a secret, like, I was actually a cop, or whatever their secret is. And they can then reveal that. Matt has a secret that's still tied to someone in the game. And obviously you want to get that off your chest. It's been such a huge part of your game. And it's hard that he does still have to lie. He's a Jury Villa. You should be able to have like the comforts of life again, you know, having to not lie being one of them. And he can't do that for the game, and he decides to let it out here. I still think that, as we have now agreed, it was a dick move. You're just more okay with the dick move than I am. But I also want to say, no more saying that this Matt-Dave friendship was an advantage. This has been something that's all been over social media. This was a complication. It came with inherent advantages and disadvantages. You know, as I've said, it was one of the reasons Matt probably got blindsided, because it lulled him into that false sense of security, because he had so much trust. And for Dave, at the merge, yes, he got carried through by Matt, but he was also in a position at the merge we now see where he had to either go to the end with Matt, the biggest threat in the game, or cut him and have Matt have this over him and tell other people and basically ruin his chances of the final tribal council. So yes, Matt got him through a few votes, but he also might be the reason he's now drawing dead. If he is. So I can't have it anymore where it's like it was an advantage for them and a disadvantage for everyone else. It definitely had a huge impact on the game. Certainly other people might have been disadvantaged by it, and other people might benefit from it. You know, if someone's sitting next to Dave, like even if Lisa's sitting next to Dave and he doesn't get any votes that he might have got, she's advantaged by it, because it's a complication in the game. It's a wrinkle in the game. It was certainly a twist, but I'm not no more saying that it was this unfair advantage, because at this point I think, you know, Dave probably won't win. Matt's already been voted out. So,
yeah,
a complication more than an advantage for sure.
I definitely agree that it was not an advantage, but I can definitely agree that those other players who were voted out instead of him, they would have a very hard time trying to reconcile that.
Yeah.
And I feel for them. I really do. I feel for them that there was this thing that how could they have possibly combated that when no one knew.
And but other people did. Lisa managed to break them apart.
But they didn't know. What I'm saying is, how did they combat this thing that they didn't even know existed? And I also feel, in many ways, I feel for the show also. Like, it's been great TV, so, like, I'm sure they don't care. But, like, at first when they figured that out, like, I don't think that was not their intention to put two friends on the show.
No.
And the fact that it actually happened, that would suck. Like, you go through months of planning, you know, you go through casting all these people and then you fly them out there and all of a sudden there's this whole thing that you have not accounted for. Trust me, reality TV producers try account for absolutely everything. Mm. And that would have been such a wrinkle for them as well. So it's been great TV and it's not an advantage or disadvantage. But it's not an advantage, but God, it would suck to be a Renee, a Dylan, a, you know, Adam, whatever.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes twists in the game come back and hurt you. And I think we have to look at this as what it was. A twist in the game that complicated life for all the people in the game, including Matt and Dave and all the people around them, and definitely had implications beyond that. And yeah, some of it was bad for the people around them and some of it was really bad for Matt and Dave. So definitely an interesting complication. And yes, definitely a mistake. Not sure how I would feel about seeing it again, but you know what, maybe a blessing in disguise, because it's been super compelling.
It has been very compelling. And yeah, you've said it before, like, you know, in your other podcasts, and I agree, I'm all about team TV. Just whatever's good TV is good, and this has been interesting. Can we talk about Dave a little bit?
Yeah, well, let's talk about Dave, because you think he's drawing dead, and I still do think that he has a shot, but I definitely was higher on Dave's chances when Adam was in the jury villa car talking about how Dave's an idiot for voting him off, but also that if Tess isn't there, Adam will be championing him on the jury. Then by the end, Adam knows about the Matt Dave thing, so now I'm not feeling so great about his chances. But what did you think about his decision here? Because he's kind of in that swing vote position that definitely should have earned him a massage, Tessa, where he can either go with the Tessa Adam side or he can go with Lisa and Tara. So he obviously goes with Lisa and Tara. How did you feel about that?
Well, first of all, I was really surprised that Adam said that he would even consider voting for Dave. Like, that was a huge shock to me.
He's very mad at Lisa.
Yeah. So look, I actually, if I was Dave, I wouldn't go with Adam or Tess.
Mm.
Simply because of the makeup of that jury. There's no way that Tara's getting any votes.
Yeah.
But Adam is so likable to his clique, and Tessa was likable to her clique as well, that they're going to split votes and they're going to get them and the story's going to be about them. And yes, you can be in juxtaposition to them, but I really feel like in his mind, and even in my mind, if I was Dave, I would be going with Lisa and Tara. Now, obviously Lisa's fantastic, but Lisa has done a very good job of not making it clear that she's fantastic. They only figured it out on day 36.
Yeah.
And Dave hadn't even figured it out. This was the bit that killed me. Someone, and I wish I could remember the exact line. You probably might remember it. When he goes, someone says, we should vote. I think maybe it was Adam's, like, maybe we could vote Lisa or something like that. And he's like, Lisa? And Dave was like, what? Like, and his face was like, it was 100% genuine. It wasn't him feeding it. It was completely genuine. He hadn't even considered that Lisa was a threat.
Is that a threat thing, or is that how good her relationship is with him?
It's how good she is and how bad he is. So if you're in Dave's shoes and you are Dave, he made the right decision.
Mm.
Now, if you, Shannon, someone who's highly perceptive, is in that situation, well, then maybe you consider voting out Lisa and then Adam and going with, you know, I don't know, or something else. I feel like Dave is in a nearly an impossible situation. I can't see him beating anyone unless it was a final two with Tara.
I think it could get close. Like, you're in a weird spot here. It's something that we had with, say, like Survivor China, where, you know, final three with seven people, you just need four, sometimes even three votes if you're going to split the vote somehow, like Laurel thought she was going to do with Wendell and Dom. Like, I think that you just need a few votes, and he does have friends on the jury. Like, he at least has Aaron. How lucky is he? But also, I think he might have Eve. I've been really going along with the Aaron stuff today. I don't know why.
It's great. Keep going.
I think that when he's looking at this decision between these two pairs, there's two things he needs to consider, and that is making it through the final four, because he is a threat. You know, if you were to look at it, like, he's got the underdog story. He's been good at challenges to the point where he almost always comes second. He might have the most second place victories or silver medals on Survivor. I think Jeff Pittman might be able to help us with this, because he's like the Jinho of the season. I think for me, when I look at him going with Adam and Tessa, I think he's got a hard run there at Final Four. That's why I'm not mad at the decision for him to stick with Lisa and Tara, because at Final Four, he has no trust with Adam and Tessa. They've always been kind of mean to him. He's never worked with them. They didn't take him on the reward. So they haven't really formed any trust or relationship with him. So if he were to go there and then say Tessa wins immunity and they've taken out Lisa, what's to stop that pair from not taking out Tara? Because why would you take out Tara at the Final Four? That would be nonsensical. So then he basically needs to win immunity or they're going to vote him out. So I think that's tough. I do think if he gets to the end with them, yeah, with that 7-person jury, it might be tough. I think, they'll have obviously the Brad Renee side. I think he's got Aaron and Eve. And also if he puts Lisa on a jury, I think she'd respect that. She'd be the kind of player to respect that a jury. So he might get a vote there. Also Matt, that would be an interesting vote. Matt might vote for him, might vote for Adam. So I think he would have some votes. I think he'd really have to sell that underdog story, but I think getting there is the problem. Then if I look at the Tara Lisa pair, if he goes with them, which he did, I think that's easier to get to the final three because you can sell Lisa obviously as a threat. And then obviously he has trust with them. He can trust that they'll take Tessa out of that final four. He'll go with them to the end. I do think then between him and Lisa, it becomes more, aside from the personal relationships, it becomes more a battle of the story. Like, are they bitter against Lisa or do they really respect her moves as a super strategist? Or do they really like his compelling underdog story? Obviously, this is all without them knowing about the Matt friendship, yes, which might screw it up completely, but he doesn't know about that. So
yes,
I think that would be an interesting battle. I think he has his own story, but yes, Lisa might be tough to beat. It just is how the jury perceives it. But I think that he feels like he has a stronger chance of getting there, which, he might. And then there's also, if Tess were to win immunity next time, he could maybe work with her to try and get out of Lisa, at least send himself and Lisa to fire and try and sit somehow at the end with like Tara and Tessa. And that would be really interesting because Tessa, I think, would have Adam, Brad and Renee. I think he could have Aaron, Eve, and Lisa, and then Matt might be a swing vote there. So I think he would have a shot there. I don't think he's drawing dead as much as you do. I think he has a compelling story. I think he has a few votes that he could get. But yeah, I feel obviously a lot worse about it now having seen the end of that jury villa.
Right. I just feel like, I don't know, is Eve really a lock for him? Is Aaron really a lock for him?
Aaron, yes, they loves work him. I think, yeah, he's got Aaron.
Okay.
He's not Chinese. Like, he's Chinese champion.
Yeah. Look, surely. I don't know. I'm so low on Dave's ability as a Survivor player. He's shown very little game acumen. He never saw Matt as a threat. Like, didn't he say he was willing to go to the end with Matt?
But he saw it eventually.
Yeah, well, like, he was going to go to the end with him. Like, that should have never been in his plans. Never.
Yeah, that was the worst thing he said in the game, basically. But I'm a bit higher on his game than you are.
Well, like, he just seems so unaware of social cues. Someone says to him, like, who can't you beat at the end? And he says, oh, to be honest, I haven't given him much thought. And while he might just be spinning a line, I believe that he hasn't given it much thought if he was going to take Matt to the end. Like, it didn't occur to him that Lisa was a threat. I don't know. I just feel like, he says he wants to go to the end with three physical players. Who are these physical players in this game at this point?
Like, Adam is, I guess, the third most physical player.
And can we, yeah. And what about the fact that he has an immunity idol,
mm-hmm,
that he cannot use again and he doesn't do anything with it?
Yes. This is
interesting. It is crazy to me. And again, it shows he has no understanding of perception. Why would you not pull that thing out and A, play it on your, oh, sorry, he had immunity. He had the immunity.
No,
why would you
had the
not?
Immunity.
Oh, okay. So,
but he's a swing vote. Like, he's not going home.
For sure, but play it on yourself anyway. Or orchestrate a scenario where you save someone who was going to be there anyway so that you look like you were the hero who constructed the final four. Why not play it on Lisa? Make it look like Lisa needed you, not like you needed her. There's so many things that he could do with it, and he did nothing. The jury will not even know that he had it. And having an idol is a huge tick in the jury's mind. Like, I knew that the jury on Australian Survivor Season 1 probably wasn't going to award me $500,000. So one of the things, when I got that idol, I was like, okay, cool. This is something that I can put to my name. It's a big thing that especially if you use it correctly or the manner in which you use it, even the fact that he held on to it for so long, he could spin that into something. But the fact that they don't know about it is just nuts to me.
Well, people were speculating online, is he going to try pull like a Tony Vlachos and say he can use it at 4 or something? I'm pretty sure Matt Chisholm was pretty clear about Like, Lisa's not falling for that if that's something he's trying.
Yeah, you think Dave is going to come up with that?
I'm higher on Dave's game than you, but no, I don't think he's going to do that. But I do think that the move here, and we are a bit spoiled on this because we just watched Wendell do this for Laurel, and that really helped his game. In fact, it might have been a winning game move for him. But the move here is to play it on Lisa, who's getting two votes, just to assert some dominance in front of the jury. Like, you go to the jury villa, and they're all talking about how he's like a puppet for Lisa and is doing things against his will, and Lisa's completely in control. So this is something you can do where it's like, I had the idol, Lisa was in trouble, I saved her. Like, maybe it's not as much of like a hierarchy as you think, and we're a little bit more equal. So it's like, instead of just doing nothing with the idol, like, you might as well have done that. If it earns you even a little bit of goodwill, surely that would be helpful. And yes, I think his most impressive moves in the game, again, maybe now ruined with the jury if they find out about Matt, but it is impressive that he got votes for tribal councils in a row after the merge, didn't play the idol, ended up never needing the idol, but he didn't play it. That was impressive, and the jury need to know, because that's one of the most impressive parts of his game. And I do think there's a compelling story there as the Chani underdog, but they need to know about these elements of his game as well.
He might still pull it out. You know, he might still discuss it, but it just seems like you don't want to wait until final tribal council to have to convince people. Like, and that was one of the problems that, you know, I had with Christy, was that she waited so long to convince us, and it worked in the end. But like,
that's the worst example. Like, she actually did that.
Look, no, I'm saying that it's really tricky. And she came in with an uphill battle of many people not wanting to vote. I wasn't going to vote for her. But, you know, you don't want to have to wait for that Hail Mary. Why not do it at 5 and then give the jury 2 or 3 days to kind of really consider you as a contender? You know, we all know that the Christy Bennett final tribal council scenario is not the litmus test for what you should do. It was a very unique situation that, you know, is still crazy.
Yeah, I still can't believe that happened. But I thought that the way that he was acting in tribal was so compelling to me. Dave has, at the very least, been a very compelling character to me, and especially in the last couple of episodes, as he wrestles with one of the toughest decisions that someone in Survivor, I think, so far has made. Sierra Easton has absolutely nothing on this, but, you know, he actually was a swing vote to vote out his best friend, someone that Matt has called him one of his oldest and dearest friends. The way that he has wrestled with this emotionally is one of the things I love about Survivor, because it's a game, but these personal moments, I think, have been really, really compelling as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, day 36 is it's Survivor gets a lot. That's a lot of Survivor that your brain goes through. I had a breakdown on day 36. Like, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I don't begrudge him having that emotional moment at Tribal Council. That's a big thing that he's done, voting out his mate. So, you know, Dave, I'll give you that one.
I want to talk a little bit about Tara, who, poor Tara, ends up being like the last person on my list to talk about, I think, every week. But, you know, probably for quite a good reason. The editors have a lot of fun with burying Tara. They have a thing here where Adam says she's been asleep the whole competition. Then the shot cuts to her sleeping. That's bad edgic. Like, you don't need to know all the codes and everything to know that that's not great. And the confessional she has, which I think was the main
sleep
part.
What's this? What's the edit code for sleep?
Invisible. Usually that was her most of it. It's been
invisible.
No, there's
got to be
negative.
An actual one, like HS, you know, hammock sleeping or something.
Yeah, it's just asleep.
HS edit. There we go.
We have to invent new edit terms for Tara for how poorly the editors have treated her in this post-merge particularly, but really throughout the whole season. And you know what? Like, people have been talking about whether the edit is misrepresenting her game. I've seen a bit of that online. Like, it's so unfair. She should get more of an edit. And, you know, it's not really true of the game she was playing. But you know what? The editors have shown the contestants saying similar things about her, whether it's like Adam or Matt or even her friend Lisa. They don't respect her game. And the thing is, like, whether she thinks she's making moves or not, we know she thinks she was making the Brad move and having a big part in all of this. And she has had a similar trajectory to Lisa, strategically the same trajectory. So you would think that maybe she could claim those moves, but just the way she's perceived, you know, the contestants make up the ecosystem of the game. They're the people you're playing with. They're the people who vote for you. And if they think you're doing nothing, perception is reality and you aren't doing anything. So that's what the editors are trying to show us. I'm sure there'll be a payoff in it in that she probably can't win, but I think that's what the editors are trying to do.
Yeah, I agree. And you can't even argue, oh, she's just an unassuming player, because Lisa's an unassuming player, but she's got stuff going on in the background that is that is, and even the way she delivers it and talks about it is so compelling. Mm. You know, but, and I would argue, you know, I feel sorry for Tara because, you know, you go on this big experience, you make it to the end, you think you're going to be a big part of the show, and then you go home and your family are like, well, what the where the hell are you? Like, you know, I feel for her, you know, but, you know, I would argue that she's actually gotten more than she would get in any other Survivor season, in any other in country's Survivor, because there's even that quick conversation when, you know, when just before Tribal, Tess says, so I can't even, well, Tara, do you want to vote with us? And then she goes, well, want me to be honest? No. And then it just kind of cuts. And it just kind of cuts out. And it's like, you would never even get that on American Survivor. No. You would never get that on Australian Survivor. Like, at least she got that.
This is Tara's specialized hammock sleep edging, where it's like, yes, they're showing us her great jury management, where she tells Adam that she has no interest in working with him, and then he's going to go to the jury and he's not going to vote for her.
Oh my God, it's, well, so bad.
It's so bad. Oh my God.
Hammock. Do you want to be honest? No, but, and they didn't even let her say but or explain. They just kind of cut it.
Oh my God, it was terrible, but it wasn't even the worst part of this episode for her. The worst part was this confessional. Oh my God. She says, I don't want to sit next to people I've dragged along. Ooh, boy. I want to sit next to people who have played as good a game as me. So much is painful about this. The first is that that's really faulty logic. That's bad. That's a bad move, Tara. Like, if this was not delusional, that would actually be a really bad move. But it is completely unaware from what we've seen. And it's ironic because she's the one who's being dragged along.
It's so bad. I feel, I just, it's like, I've been watching The Office, right? I've been rewatching The Office with my wife, and kind of been, you know, every time Michael Scott says something, I just cringe, and I just can't, I look through the screen, like through fingers, and I just feel like that's what I was doing when she said that. I was just like, oh, no, 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 this is so bad. And yeah, especially like, and you know, saying it in the moment, she wouldn't have even had any clue what was coming for her when she watched this show. And to what, oh, wow, poor girl.
Yeah. But girl. I do think that we've had a little bit of questions about the whole mother perception and people hoping that Lisa can kind of buck this mother perception, which often stops you from winning the game. And yeah, we're not sure that she's going to win, even win in the votes. But I do think it helps her that she has like someone who can almost outmother her next to her in the final tribal council. Like, Lisa's not a very similar archetype to Denise, but maybe in a different world, Denise, just by virtue of her demographic, is the mother. And she has Lisa Welchel there, who's way more the mother. So it takes that character away from her. And I think that maybe Lisa can push that mother perception completely onto Tara if she can. Then she can be her real character, which is like the super fan strategist, which is what she has been in the game. So I think that helps
really
her game.
Good observation. That is a, like, Shannon, you've done it again. Like, that's a really good, really good observation. I'm very impressed with that. And I want to see them at the final tribal council to see that play out.
Yeah. Well, maybe we will. But I mean, Tara, I think we're seeing there, because who was getting rid of Tara at the final four?
Well, look, you know, why did Tessa take Adam? So you never know. So
yeah, Tessa will do something crazy. I know that you don't like these characters like Tessa because they don't know the game and they don't learn the game and it's been 36 days, why don't you know how to play the game yet? But you know what? It's freaking entertaining. Like, it adds the freshness and the realness, and it makes it like,
for sure,
put these grenades in there, and then she does something hilarious like this reward pick. So I love having people like this on the show.
I understand. And I feel like, you know, I've copped a bit of crap online, and even other people have, you know, about like, oh, it can't all be super fans. And it's like, no, I understand that. I don't want it to be all super fans. But if someone tells you, Shannon, you're about to go live on a Thai island for a month and a bit, you don't think you would watch an episode before you went out there to prep yourself? That's what I can't abide. You don't have to be a super fan. Like, you got, some people have got much bigger and better things to do than people like us who just sit there and watch Survivor. Like, but more power to them. But you wouldn't even watch an episode? That's what I can't stand.
But and like, knowing Tess as I do now, that makes so much sense to me. Like, I wouldn't expect anything less.
Great. It can make sense, but it doesn't mean, like, it just makes it so infuriating. Like, it's like what Sam Webb out there with me, like, he didn't watch a single episode. That's like, it's like going to play cricket and you've never, you know, you're about to walk onto the MCG and you've never, you're like, okay, so what do I do with this stick? Like, what do I do? What are those three sticks down the other end of this little runway thing? Like, you know, like, that's literally what it's like. Watch some cricket.
Yeah, my brother texted me a question asking, wanting to ask you who has better morals, Tess or Sam, but I told him that I didn't want you to spontaneously combust. So left that out of the question thread.
Okay. Let's just quickly, I know we've got a lot of questions to get to, but can we just quickly touch on tribal council? Mm-hmm. What did you think of Adam's open forum about Lisa?
Well, I think at that point, it's like, what else does he have? He probably knew he was kind of dead to right at that point, at the point that they had waited so long to approach Dave and Tara and hadn't taken them on the reward. So it's like all he can do really is try and throw Lisa under the bus. But I think it's even more interesting that he had that conversation at Jury Villa, which should be a great thing for her game, and then is so bitter and will never vote for her. What else could he have done at this tribal council that would have saved him?
Yeah, I actually think he did a really good job. Mm-hmm. I think he did a really good job the way he pitched his Lisa pitch, basically. Mm-hmm. He was it wasn't too much, and it was just the right amount. It was the right level of combativeness, but also in a way that wasn't off-putting if he was trying to convince Dave to swap. I just think that I'm really impressed with the way he did it. Now, he completely lost me when he then said to all my companions that on the jury, absolutely the worst thing you're trying to say when you're trying to get someone to take you to the final four. But I thought that the way he did it was actually quite good. So that was pretty good.
Yeah.
And apparently she's got 204 games in her closet. What does that mean?
I know. Can I come over for a game night, Lisa? Like, that sounds really fun.
The best selection of games in the Stanger household. How do you say her last name? Stanger?
I don't know. I've never known.
Stanger. Right.
What a hilarious argument against someone, though. Like, she has so many games. Like, I hope I don't go on Survivor. There would be a lot of arguments to get rid of me, and my game collection shouldn't have to be one of them.
I want to go over. Okay, if Lisa wins the Chizzy points, one of the things that she has to do is she has to invite us over to the Stanger Zone, where we get to play all her, like, you know, games and, like, you know, in Welcome to the Thunderdome, you know, Settlers of Catan, the Resistance, all these awesome games. I'm sure that she'd be so good at.
So now the Cheesy winner has gotten to the point where they have to do things for us.
Yes, it's a burden. With great power comes great responsibility.
I haven't wanted to say it, but it's becoming really a burden. Like, they should not want to win it anymore. Like, a LaBelle's Lobster's Hat is good, but it's not worth it.
It's so good. Okay. No, it's great. It's great.
All right, we're going to get to the Chizzy soon, but first let's get into some Chismisms. It was a bit light this week, but there was still some hilarity from Matt Chisholm, as always. My favorite running theme of the entire season is Matt Chisholm asking people why they feel how they feel when they're in very deep, very obvious emotional moments. You know, he had it with Eve a couple of weeks ago where he's like, how are you? And she's bawling. He's like, Tess wins the immunity challenge. And he's sobbing, and he's like, Tess, why are you crying? Well, why do you think so, Matt Chisholm? Like, let's try and work it out together, I think.
No, he's just trying to be a good host, and sometimes he just gets in his way, doesn't he? Because he's just such a
psychologist.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah. He is a nice guy, but this was super shady. He says during the challenge, can Dave win a challenge without an advantage? That's mean. That's a swipe, I think.
Oh, that's so good.
Another chism as well was just like the whole reward challenge, which I felt was like structured really weirdly. Like, why did it have to be in stages? I felt like the water was completely unnecessary. But Chizzy's face as he's watching Tess's dominoes fall and his mouth is just open was amazing. And there's also this really dramatic music for this reward challenge.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny.
That was good. That was good. The water, like, and it's going to plop into this bucket of pink water.
Why? How unnecessary was that?
I got to say, the challenge, like, the of course, I had to come on the week of the challenge that I was voted out on the poll. Nice. Thanks, Shannon.
Why are you crying, Nick?
you really planned that one well, didn't you?
And also, I should say about Matchism that Kiwi Jeff Fan on Twitter has offered another thing for the hashtag Rahamper, another burden to give to this Chizzy winner, which is a wall hanging that says, always be yourself unless you can be Kiwi Jeff, then be Kiwi Jeff. So we've added that as well to the prize pool.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's getting better, see?
Yeah. All right.
It's a balance.
Okay, well, let's get to the Chizzy, where we're giving out 3 points each, and you can split them however you like. I'll give out my points, and just a leaderboard at the moment. So we've got Matt in the lead on 27. Catching him, trying to catch him. We have Tara, who's on 1 point that I gave her in the first episode. Tess is on 3 points. Lisa is on 13 points. Dave is on 13 points. And Adam ended on 19 points. For me, Tess, I said, played the worst game 2 weeks in a row. Dave's decision was fine, but I didn't think worth a chizzy point. And Tara's nothing. I actually thought that Adam, I could maybe give a memorial chizzy vote to, because I thought he was good in that tribal council and he did get Tess back on side and somehow she gave him a massage. But I am still going to be giving 3 points to Lisa, who survived after being the biggest target and taking out Matt last week, also controlled the vote, you know, consolidated that relationship with Tara, with Dave. She just has such great awareness. And yes, they talk about all the board games in her cupboard, and that's really fun. But the main thing is her social game, and she can talk about underplaying it all she wants and how she's never been good at the social stuff. The only way you can make moves and play this game of Survivor is by being this at the center socially, which she absolutely is. So for surviving again, 3 votes to Queen Lisa. Nick, who are you giving votes to?
I'm going to give 1 point to Tara, 1 point to Tess, and 1 point to Dave.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I'm going to give all 3 points to Lisa. I think she's been playing everything beautifully. I think that the way she talks to people, while, you know, it's not in your face. You can see that she's trying to make these kind of real kind of social connections. It comes off a bit awkward sometimes, like when she was worried about Adam passing out and blacking out. I thought that was a bit stilted. So you can see that she's actively trying every conversation and that she actually is just a nice person, but she has to try to make it come across a certain way. So I really, really like that. I just love the way that she has a really clear pulse, a finger on the pulse of what's happening in the tribe. She is very self-aware, and I just feel like she's been good the whole time, but she's really hitting her stride at the right amount, right time. Like if she'd popped her head up on day 23, you know, she wouldn't be here anymore. So she's been kind of trending up, 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 up. And then to pull off the, you know, like the, what she did last week, and then to kind of maintain that and still not be, her name wasn't even in the mix to be thrown out. Like her name was in the mix, but like there was no really real danger in my mind that she was going to, I never felt worried for her. I don't know whether that was the edit doing that, but I just feel like she's just perfect. And I put out a tweet earlier, I think it was yesterday, that we need Lisa on every season of every Survivor of every country for all of time, because I am so, so fascinated by her and her little voice and everything. So she gets 3 points from me, and I cannot believe that she was on 13 points only before this podcast.
Well, to be fair about the 13 points before this podcast, like the chizzy, much like the Brownlow that it's based on, is built to show like consistency in the game. And the thing is, like, she still could win. Like now she's on 19 points. There's 12 points left, and she needs 8 to tie with Matt. So she's still got a shot, but like, throughout the game, she was playing a very quiet game. And if you go back to some of those earlier episodes, some of the social stuff was a little bit awkward. Yes, she was building those relationships, which ended up being so important for her. It's a little bit hard to reward that in the chizzy when it's kind of behind the scenes. But some of it was a little bit awkward with like the JT stuff when she came back from the outpost. So now she's having her moment. And I think that's a great way to win Survivor. Like to do it at the final six, even now it might be a little bit too early. People are still coming for her, but to have a really quiet game, build your relationships, and then make one of the best games, one of the best moves that the game has ever seen, not mad at that at all. That is a perfect winning strategy. It makes it a little bit more difficult for you to win the chizzy if that's something that you're after, which everyone is, because it's great, because that's meant to be, you know, more consistency across the board and have it from episode one. I've said a lot of the time, it's oftentimes doing nothing in the pre-merge, especially if you're in an older female demographic, is better. Better for the game, not as good for the chizzy. I still think she's doing well, and I think she might be a favorite for the chizzy right now as well. So well done to Lisa, the chizzy winner again this week. Now I want to get into some questions, because we got so many fantastic questions this week, Nick.
Awesome.
The first one that I love from Fiona Warman and me, it's actually two questions, but the first one is, which is the bigger betrayal, Dave voting off Matt or Matt revealing their friendship at Jury Villa? I think you know what I'm going to say.
No, I think Dave voting Matt out is worse, because it has real, like, it got someone voted out of the game, and that is the worst thing on Survivor. That is the thing that everyone wants the least. So yeah, I definitely think it's Dave voting him out. But I feel like they were in an impossible situation to begin with, because unless they went to the end with each other, it was always going to end badly.
Yeah, well, I disagree, because yes, it got Matt voted out and he lost the game. But now Dave might also lose the game, but I just don't see the purpose to it. I think it was more personal, more vindictive, where Dave's move was very much not personal. If it was personal based on the way he's crying about a tribal council, he certainly wouldn't have done it. So I think Matt is a bigger betrayal. But Fiona also asks, who on the jury should be feeling the most screwed over by this revelation?
That's a really good question. Who are the people that it was either out of, that it was either...
Well, Dave got votes at the first four tribal councils of the merge. So
yeah, I would actually say, I wouldn't say Eve, because Eve got there with the help of Dave. So mm-hmm. any help that Dave got, she was also the beneficiary of. So it would have to be someone from Kung Kao, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah.
So well, I would say it's either Brad or Adam or...
Well, I mean, Adam yeah. went after Matt, but I guess he did keep handing over his game. But you know what? He made that decision. I don't know. I think Brad could be mad about it. Renee could maybe be mad about it.
I feel like Renee cooked her own game. I feel like it was probably...
I agree, but I don't think she thinks that.
Yeah. I'd probably say Brad. But, like, also, great. If it was Brad, then I'm cheering. So, how is Brad winning the fan favorite vote?
Why isn't Aaron winning it? Why do people not listen to me and vote how I tell them to vote?
Guys, people who are listening who are from New Zealand, do you have to be from New Zealand to vote?
I mean, you have anyone? To be from New Zealand. I'm doing bunny fingers if you can't see. You can't. It's an audio podcast.
Yeah. Okay, well, people who are from New Zealand with the audio.
Are you doing the fingers now?
I am. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, what are you doing? Why would Brad be getting votes? Like, he's got a great body. He was a great, he's a good looking dude. And, he's a high school teacher, which is great. Same like me. Awesome. But what exactly makes him the fan favorite?
Mm. I think that he's the one who got the most screwed over. You just said it.
And?
Yeah.
Like, he went out with an idol in his pocket. Like, he's I don't know. He's got a man bun. What, like?
They all have man buns.
Yeah, there's so many more compelling people on this. How many people? He was voted out what? So 10th or something?
Nine.
Okay. So out of the top 10, of the 10 people who were able to be getting votes, he would be like 8th for me. Like
Brad isn't even the best person with a man bun to get voted out with an idol in his pocket at Jury Villa right now.
Exactly. There are so many better people to vote. So what's the current rank? Do you know what it is?
Well, I just know from last week, I think it's set with Brad, Eve, and Dave. And you told me before on this podcast that I would be influential. Where is Aaron? Come on, people.
Brad, Eve, and Dave?
Yeah. Well, this is hot.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Fan favorite's not important. It's all about the chizzy.
It's not important, but it's
indicative. There's money attached to it, though.
To me, it's indicative of the wider population that watched the show. It's like, what did Eve do? Why is Lisa not in the top three?
Because RHAP might not be like the whole fan base, just most of the fan base. I don't know.
Lisa, Matt, Adam was like hilarious, but I can understand why people maybe, were put off by him.
Tara.
I don't know. Anyway.
We're being pretty mean to Tara.
We are.
We literally gave her a new edgy rating. Like, she might as well win the fan favorite now, poor thing. All right, another question.
Sorry, I derailed you. Let's do a lot of these questions. Let's do them quick fire so we can get through them.
They're actually really long questions. Okay. Christian Esparza says, why would the contestants get rain gear but not our boy Chiz? Yeah, what was with this rain gear? They walked in. I'm like, were they always wearing that? Because I'm not particularly observant, but why did they have this rain gear?
No, they've had that rain gear at other points in the game, which is so strange to me. But why does Chiz? Because Chiz is a man. Chiz is this kind of this beast, this kind of mythical creature. He doesn't need no raincoats. He just stands there in all his glory, absorbing it. He draws power from the nature. He doesn't need a raincoat.
He's more god than man, I think, at this point.
He is.
Okay, this is a great question. Tim Shield says, I'm curious to know your thoughts on the Matt-Dave relationship versus the pre-existing relationships from the Blood versus Water seasons. In my view, the takeaway is that a friendship is a vastly more complicated relationship with respect to gameplay than husband-wife, siblings, parent-child, etc., as it offers potential opportunities for safety and working together, but is also more delicate and fraught with risk. There is less inherent trust and victories aren't shared. Should Survivor producers think about casting fewer tight relationships for future Blood versus Water type seasons?
That is a really good point. That's something I actually spoke about once. I don't know who I spoke about it with. I don't think it was on air, but that is a really good point. I've always thought that friends, colleagues, I would love to see like in-laws, like two brother-in-laws or something like that. That's, you know, I don't know. I just feel like there's other relationships out there like that would be have more potential for drama, because the reason why Blood versus Water was a success was because, you know, was such a success. Well, one of the reasons was because Sierra voted out her mum, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the thing that we should be aiming for, we need to aim for relationships which are going to break apart. And, you know, I have often gotten the question, you know, would you do Blood versus Water with your wife? And like, we both said no, like, because that is you're painting yourself into a really, really tricky position where your whole existence out there is now about protecting someone else. And it's hard enough to do it on your own, trust me, than have someone else. So yes, someone that you might potentially be okay with jagging is a better idea.
Yeah, Survivor acquaintances.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of the compelling part of this was that no one knew. So that's secret of nature, and that's what kind of like everyone feels really screwed over by. But yeah, I think it is super compelling because they don't share the money. A lot of Blood versus Water relationships are going to end up like
sharing.
If not sharing the money, then it's like someone that you'd be pretty happy to give $500,000 to, like a kid of yours or a parent or whatever. So like, I think that it definitely is really interesting. And I don't know if it's something that Survivor will do. It's a bit of a hard thing to frame. It's like, first we had people who were very close. Now we have people who are kind of close. Like, it's just a weird way to frame it. Like, if you were to look at the couples that they've had, I definitely feel like Hayden and Kat were just dating to go on the show, certainly from Hayden's perspective. Jervis and his niece is a bit of a weird one.
But that was one that I was really interested to see, because that was the most distant in my mind. Mm. That was even fantastic when like he kind of let her kind of like, you know, I don't know. I just feel like that was something, you know. What are some other relationships that we could have? We could do like here's Max and his landlord, Sharon.
Landlord. Work colleagues, I think, are a good one. Like, there's familiarity there, but you don't need them there the whole time.
Here's Millie and her driving instructor.
I had the best driving instructor. He would win Survivor, honestly.
What about, like, just like, you know, like a teacher and a student. That would be really weird. Like some, there's so much more stuff that you could actually get people like to turn on each other. I love it. Good luck.
Okay. So that's a better theme than a lot of what Survivor is doing at the moment. So hit us up for
Survivor
the ideas.
Survivor acquaintances.
I think it's really good.
Yes, please. Can you think of the most, the funniest pairing and send us your pairings for Survivor acquaintances.
That's so good. They have to
do
that.
If you can beat Landlord, I want you to beat Landlord, because to me that's my favorite. So what about a season of Survivor Landlords, and it's just like
so specific. We have a tribe of landlords and a tribe of tenants. Survivor Landlords versus tenants.
The best.
Yeah, well, okay, definitely send those in. I don't think we have any sway with US Survivor. I don't think that they're listening to the end of this podcast, but I feel like Survivor New Zealand, some people, maybe Matt Chisholm, are listening to this. Next season, Survivor New Zealand, Landlords versus Tenants, Survivor Acquaintances, make it happen.
Good. Next question. Let's fire through. I said we were going to rapid fire, and here I am. Like,
We'll do the last one. Pia Virolainen says, do you think the amazing Lisa could finally break the recent strategic Momolu's final tribal council curse if she makes it to the end? If so, why? Is there a cultural difference between the US and New Zealand, Australia? I know we've spoken about this a bit, but it was interesting to me that they showed her mothering Adam in this very episode. And I think if she does get to the end and loses, especially against someone like a Tess, then the mother curse is so, so real, realer than it's ever been. Like, it's clearly a thing already, but with Lisa, it would be the most tragic ever.
Yeah. I can't speak for the cultural norms in New Zealand, but if you look at what happened to Barb's, that's not a good template to work from. I don't know. I'm very afraid that could be a thing, but I think you summed it up perfectly about having Tara there might help mitigate it. So he is hoping.
Well, we've had three seasons so far of New Zealand and Australia, and two of them have been lost by that mother figure. I mean, Tara had her own problems way back when in Australian Survivor season 2, but Yeah, I feel like that's something that might cross oceans, that problem with being mothered by someone, yeah, feeling really close to them personally, and then them cutting you. Like, that's what Adam says he's so mad about. At Jury Villa, he's talking about it. He's so angry that she uses personal relationships to lure you in, and then she votes you out. Like, that's brilliant, Adam. That's why you vote for her, because that's so brilliant. But people are so hurt by it when it's someone who's caring for them and nurturing them. And she does it even after blindsiding Adam last episode. She's talking to him about how he needs to drink water and she doesn't want him to faint. Like, that inherent nurturing, mothering quality is there, and it comes back to bite these women time after time, and it's upsetting, and it would be very upsetting here.
Yeah.
On that note, yeah, on that depressing note.
There's another great question from Connor Redder, who said, is it too early to determine that Lisa is the best player in New Zealand Survivor history, even though it's a short history? And I would say that is, she's 100% the best player in Survivor history, like New Zealand Survivor history.
Well,
would you agree?
She has not won the game yet. She hasn't even won the chizzy yet.
Even if she gets voted out next week, she's still the best player.
Is she? Because, I mean, then she's the kind of person who made that great move but then was voted out. I still think she made the best move in New Zealand Survivor history, obviously, in almost the game history. It's one of the best moves that I've seen. I said that last week. If she gets voted out, obviously it diminishes her overall legacy for me, and it definitely fulfills that Suri role that she's been. Look, she's up there, but if she doesn't win, it's more of a conversation for me. If she wins, I think it's quite clear cut.
I'm sorry, you can't do a 3-2-1 and disempower an idol and get two friends to vote each other out all in the same breath and not be considered the best player of a very, very shallow pool of Survivor players.
Best move ever in New Zealand Survivor, for sure.
Can I just, there's one other thing. I know that we're going long, but I just, this sentence keeps popping up that people keep saying, and Matt said it a lot, and then Dave started saying it. I'm just playing my own game. What does that even mean?
It's a social game. You have to play the game with everyone else.
But, like, I feel like people use it as this way, like, oh, you know, I'm not playing strategy, whatever. I'm just playing my own game. It's like, hold on a second. Like, that doesn't make any sense, because you're using that as, like, carte blanche to kind of, you know, play whichever way you want, but you're actually using that phrase in a way to make it seem like you're not being strategic. But by playing your own game, is you're doing the exact opposite of that. Isn't everyone supposed to be playing their own game? Like, and if you're trying to be someone who's playing with honor and integrity, doesn't that mean that you would be playing the game for everyone else? Like, it's the exact opposite of what they think it means, and it's just become this throwaway line that they keep saying this season. Have you thought about that? It's just so weird to me. It just kind of stood out.
I do love that you would think about this, and this is the kind of thing that Lisa probably thinks about, like, on the island, and it probably takes everything out of her not to have these conversations with people and, like, correct them on why they're wrong about strategy and why they're wrong in what they're saying. Like, the way that they were analyzing Tessa's move in the reward, I was like, that's my job. Can you stop doing this? Like, I love that we saw that.
Look, I think we just got a little window into why I didn't win Survivor. So good. It's a good place to end.
You couldn't hold back where Lisa can.
Exactly. Exactly.
This is why you're wrong. You said for 37 days and then unfortunately had to go to the Jury Villa.
Whilst watching Survivor South Africa, my wife turns over to me and goes, see that? See that restraint? That's why you didn't win Survivor.
Your wife is so kind to you.
She's the best. Yeah.
All right. Well, we are at the end of the podcast. So what is the hashtag, Nick? I have some options.
Okay.
Hashtags danger zone.
Oh.
Hashtag survivor acquaintances. Hashtag landlords versus tenants. I took out the survivor there because it was a bit long. Hashtag Chinese champion. That's Dave. Hashtag chizzy godparent. That's coming into your life soon. Hashtag hammock sleep edict. There's a lot there.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's a lot. Yeah. I like a lot of them. I do like tenants versus landlords.
Maybe we do hashtag Stanger Zone for this week's Chizzy winner, because that's what it is at the moment. It's the Stanger Zone. That's what Survivor New Zealand is becoming.
Yeah, it is. I like Stanger Zone. How about we go with both? Because I think that there's some good meat on that bone that we can gnaw on. So, yeah, either or, people.
All right. Well, Nick, where can we find you on social media? And give us a little bit of a tease what's coming up with Australian Survivor, which is starting so soon.
Yeah, so Australian Survivor Season 3 is starting, and Shannon, I guess we can announce that you and I will be doing a kind of pre-season podcast coming in probably a week or so, probably a week or 2 weeks.
Before the premiere.
It'll be ready in time before the premiere. So hopefully everyone will check that out. We'll be kind of dissecting everything that we know so far. The full cast hasn't been announced just yet, but we've got plenty of stuff to say. We've already planned it out, guys, so make sure you tune in for that. I'm super pumped to get back into talking about Australian Survivor. It's been a minute, and I feel like there's a lot that's happened that we need to kind of digest. So I'll be tweeting about that. Follow me at Nick Iadanza on Twitter. Like, I know that there's plenty of people out there who listen to this podcast, and I love hearing from you guys, and I'm sure you do too. So hit us up on Twitter. I've got Instagram and all that, but you know, Twitter is where it's at for Survivor chat. So hit me up and we can talk anything and everything, as long as you don't hit me up with any spoilers. That's all I'm after. Just, you know, good Survivor discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can follow me at Shannon Gates and not tweet me any spoilers if that's a thing that people do. Don't do that. That's horrible. A thing that my God.
Yeah.
No one's done that to me yet. So that's great.
Okay. Well, it's coming.
Well, I have some very exciting news of my own. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Survivor New Zealand episode 14.
Wait, can I give a drum roll?
Yes, do the drum roll. Luke Toki himself, the King of the Jungle, will be coming on. So that is super exciting. And more of a teaser, I also have organized some deep dive postseason interviews for Survivor New Zealand. So that's something in the works as well.
Can I guess who they are?
Maybe not announcing it yet, but we'll see. this may come down to what happens in the next few weeks as well.
But look, as long as you get the Tara deep dive, I'm there.
Would Tara come on now that we've made this hashtag for her?
Absolutely
this not. Edgy line for her, yeah. But
it would actually be quite interesting, though, to hear what she has to say. Like, I'm sure she's actually got, you know, I'm sure there was more going on that we didn't see. Well, I'm sure we could hear.
We hear into the few confessionals that she has that she definitely thinks that at the very least. Now that I've said that, she's 100% never coming on. But
sorry, Tara.
Another thing that Nick alluded to is that you should all be watching Survivor South Africa. Nick watched the entire season in 17 hours, which is impressive because there's only like 8-9 hours of the season. So he was pretty much sleeping and watching that constantly, I assume.
Can I just put a little disclaimer? Okay, so, you know, I'd planned on starting to watch it because, Shannon, you've been speaking about it so, you know, like saying it's so amazing. And I thought, look, it'll be good. Like, I trust Shannon's opinion. I'm sure it'll be good, but it's not as good as you've made it out to be. But holy crap, it's better than you made it out to be. Like, good. It seriously is better. And I've already started listening to your coverage with Mike Bloom. So, and that's also been awesome. So, guys, you should check it out. So I started watching last night, and my wife has she's kind of like, you know, retreated from the Survivor world a little bit. She kind of is probably a bit sick of it, but she was watching it and she liked it. So guys, just do yourself a favor. It's all on YouTube. It's super easy to watch. It's really good quality. They don't waste a second on Survivor South Africa. It's just every second counts. So check that out. The characters are great. And I was doing stuff in the background. I was building, you know, baby furniture. So I didn't just sit there for, you know, 17 hours, but definitely something, a good way to while away an evening.
What was harder to manage, the baby furniture from IKEA or these crazy Survivor South Africa contestants?
Okay, look, so I pride myself on making, on being able to make, you know, furniture really quickly, assemble it. That's one of the things that I'm known for in my family. This dresser, like, I swear to you, it nearly killed me. It took me hours. And then just as I'd finished, I realized I'd put one of the bars upside down and I had to dismantle the whole thing. So lucky I had Survivor South Africa to kind of keep me sane throughout the whole experience.
What was more frustrating, being on Survivor or that experience?
The dresser, for sure. For sure.
All right. Well, that's great. That is really all we have today. Thank you so much, Nick, for being here. It's always such a pleasure talking to you, and I'm glad we'll be doing that again very soon with Australian Survivor, which is back on August 1st, and this season finishes July 29th. So there's really not a lot of time in between, which is how we like it. Never a break from International Survivor. But thank you so much for being here, Nick. Thank you to Scott Sapier behind the scenes. Thank you to you all for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Thanks, Shannon. Bye.
See ya.